Our speaker, Ms. Nancy Ritchie, is an associate professor from WKU Department of Library Special Collections. She's been a faculty member at WKU since 2008 and is a graduate of WKU's history program and the University of Kentucky's information science program. She's authored two local history books published by Arcadia Press, and the book she is presenting on tonight, Moe's Rager, Kentucky's Incomparable Guitar Master, is a collaboration between her and Dr. Carlton Jackson, one of WKU's university distinguished professors. Though Dr. Jackson has sadly passed, Nancy is pleased to present this evening on Moe's Rager and that Muhlenberg sound.
Thank you all so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank Jennifer and Lee, and I appreciate all that they've done. As you all can imagine, any kind of event takes a lot of time and planning. I sure appreciate them. Thank Dr. Tice and Dr. Coots. He's been a wonderful friend from, of course, from the main library, and I just appreciate all of you so much. And I want to thank my friend Gary. He's been with me through all of researching Moe's life, and I just appreciate all these helpers. And I'm so pleased to be here tonight to talk to you all about Moe's Rager. As Jennifer mentioned, my co-author, Carlton Jackson, we started on this project about 4 years ago, and sadly he died sort of in the middle of January 2014. And so with his family's blessing, I was able to continue, and I was so pleased to be able to do that. It's been a wonderful learning for me. I'm not musically inclined at all, and so that's where Gary helped me a lot, because I could ask him questions about the music part. And then Moe's family have been most helpful, and I was also thanking them. And so tonight I'll tell you a little bit about what I've learned about Moe's, and by way of introduction, I'll start off telling you that when I was growing up, a little girl in the country, I loved to read. I loved to watch old movies. The Big Show came on Saturday, and I loved to watch those old movies. And then I wanted to read about them. And so I would go to the library and get books about them. And I just knew that they were going to be exactly like what I'd seen in the movie, that they were going to be just like those characters. And you can imagine how disillusioned I was when I realized that they were nothing like the characters that they portrayed. But tonight I want to tell you about somebody who was exactly who he proclaimed to be, and I hope that you all will come to love and appreciate him as much as I have. And so I'll read to you parts of the book so that I can give you a little glimpse of his life. So Moe's was born in Ohio County, Kentucky in 1911. But the family moved to Drexboro in Muhlenberg County when Moe's was an infant so that his father could find work in the mines. The family, like many in Kentucky, did not have money for outside entertainment, and so they enjoyed the pleasures of homemade music. His father, Joe, played the banjo and picked the rhythm with the thumb, played the melody with the index finger, and it was a method that was an early influence on Moe's. But by 15, like numerous others, Moe's had joined his father in the mines. All that was required, Moe said, was a strong back and no fear. Because of this, Moe's formal education ended, and he was always very self-conscious about this. He called it his scanty school housing, saying that it only reached the henny-penny, ducky-lucky level. But when Moe's was not working, he was learning more and more about guitar playing and practicing his craft at social gatherings, weddings, dances, and even funerals. One day in the mid-1920s, a friend excitedly asked Moe's if he had been to Clayton lately. And when I gave this presentation a week ago, Moe's had, I would imagine, a country accent like myself. So when I do this, I assure you all I'm not putting on. I really talk like this. And so one day in the mid-20s, a friend excitedly asked Moe's if he had been to Clayton lately. Well, no, answered the young teen. Can't say that I have. Why? Well, said his friend, you ought to go there and see and listen to this fellow play the guitar and the sing. You'll love it. He plays up and down all around the neck. This guitar player's name was Kennedy Jones. The first song that Moe's Kennedy played was Tuck Me to Sleep in Old Kentucky. Mose was totally awed. He, Jones, ran down those beautiful chords and then good time and harmony and everything. I thought that was the greatest thing that had ever happened to me. You know, because I didn't think the guitar could be played like that. Kennedy played one beautiful tune after another. Mose even lay right down on the ground to savor the full effect of Kennedy's guitar playing. He followed Jones around, joining him at square dances, home play parties, and school events. He visited Jones' house in Clayton, and he stayed there for three or four days at a time, picking and pulling with Jones on the front porch. Mose said, "I just went crazy with that kind of picking. He'd go way down the neck, and he could pick a tune out of a guitar, and it would sound like two guitars playing at once." Kennedy Jones, it was said, had been influenced by the playing of a black itinerant musician named Arnold Schultz. This remains a point of contention in the area today, and that'll be another book, so I'm not going to touch on that Civil War tonight. Mose, however, of course, was hooked by the music. But it never mattered. How much Mose loved to play the old box, as he called his guitar. He did have to have a job. Playing an old string box, a starvation box, it could be called, did not constitute decent work. No one thought you could make a living picking a guitar. Mose's father told him, "Anybody running around playing a guitar or a fiddle, well, they're just plain lazy." And his father-in-law, Sam Maxbury, believed musicians were just like a bunch of coon or fox hunters. He'd never seen one worth killing. You can imagine how well the, when I had the guitar player last week, how well he felt when I said that. Despite working in the mine, Mose's guitar style did continue to evolve. Since musical experimentation was common in Western Kentucky, whereas other areas focused on the fiddle or the banjo, like where I'm from in Barron County, they would have fiddle and banjo competitions, Muhlenberg County residents found expressive outlets in guitar contests. This area was not dominated by one guitar style, but included harmonies, methods, codes, and chords. You can see I'm really on top of the music there. Chords, complexities that seem to be picked up along the railroad like stones and put in one's pocket for later pleasure, sharing, or stealing. Miners like Mose in particular, who were unemployed or underemployed in and around the county, frequently had ample free time, sometimes 2 or 3 hours, as they waited at the company's gathering place. If there was no work for the day, Mose recalled, while we would pass around the guitar. Our songs and tunes had humor, and each of the more accomplished players developed show-off items. We loved to do that. We shared or stole licks freely. This free time led to much interracial activity and created an interchange and experimentation with new guitar licks. The mines back then, during the Depression, while the mines would run, they would get down to 1 day a week. And that's when we get together and pass the time, all of us, black and white musicians alike. The pure love of music was a racial leveler. It was the one medium, Mose said, where blacks and whites seemed to meet on very nice common ground. It was working together to move that old rock out of the way. We did integrate when it came to playing music. And Mose's reputation was quickly spreading, as one young teen named Merle Travis remembered. My memory shows a dozen people gathered around two young men in their early 20s. The two are playing guitar. One is a sandy-haired tall man who seems to enjoy everything around him. He laughs constantly, even in the middle of a tune. The other fella, sitting on a railroad tie where they're making music near Drakesboro, Kentucky Depot, has broad shoulders, a handsome face, and he seems a little more serious. As he leans over his guitar, a lock of hair falls over his forehead like Clark Gable or Jack Moore. His name is Plucker English. The sandy-haired one is Mose Rager. The bug-eyed kid watching is me. Finally, during the last years of the Depression and into the early 1940s, when the mines got down to hardly being open, Moles knew he was going to have to do something with music to make a living for his family. His old friend Kennedy Jones had moved north and wanted Moles to join him. He was being brought into the public limelight whether he liked it or not. And this was going to include time spent away from home and family and visits to some of those big cities up north. He dealt with this as best as he could, but not all that successfully, because it was not Chicago, Washington, D.C., or even Nashville that was his magnet. It was always his Drakesboro, Muhlenberg County, Kentucky home. And so Moles would ultimately play professionally with Grandpa Jones, Ernest Tubb, Zeke Clements, Curly Fox, and Texas Ruby. And it was with Curly Fox and Texas Ruby that Moles was actually in a recording session. King Records of Cincinnati, Ohio, asked the husband and wife team, who by the late 40s were very popular throughout the entire country, to record some songs to sell at live performances and at record stores. One was called Come Here, Son, later known as Fire on the Mountain, which fans liked, but it came nowhere near to the next song that was recorded for King. The song was Black Mountain Rag, and it became a runaway bestseller at their venues. There was a lengthy period in the song that called for guitar soloists, and so since Moles was Fox and Ruby's lead guitarist, he played that section of the song on electric guitar. Just about every critic in the country hailed this part of the recording as some of the finest hot guitar work in modern country music. His lightning-like speed on the guitar astounded many listeners who could not believe that Moles was thumb-picking. It was just a thumb and one or two fingers, for he made it sound as though there were at least two, possibly three, guitars being played all at once. Fox himself noted that Black Mountain Rag was the biggest-selling country instrumental in the 1940s. Sales, he said, reached over the 600,000 mark. But Moles hated the road, he hated to leave his family, and he hated the bad habits and the temptations that road life encouraged. He also knew and felt keenly his limitations. He couldn't sell himself like Earl and other performers. He told about an early street performance to illustrate. There were several guys gathered around, and boy, I was watching kindly as I played, you know. And they looked at me like they were enjoying it, and they were kind of smiling. Looked like I was knocking them dead. And there was this guy walked up to me, kind of smiling, and he said, "Boy, boy, if I played like you, I sure wouldn't hang around here." I said, "Well, where would you go, buddy?" He said, "I'd go to Browder." One little town just up the road about a mile. You know where I went? I went home. That's where I went. I just stood there when I was playing. I just stood there and I picked and I looked out. I never did know how to sell it. After almost a decade of life on the road, Moles called it quits. He was a very deeply religious man whose relationship to God was far more important to him than the music and the money. And so he announced that he was giving up public appearances and road trips. He would only play for his friends, he said. The trouble was, his door was always open, and everybody was his friend. As we all do when we get older, Moses began to reflect and ponder on his wife and his multiple occupations of miner, industrial worker, barber, grocer, and master thumb-picking guitar player, but primarily his standing before God. The Bible verse James 1:8 haunted him. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. He carried many burdens and conflicting thoughts about playing music for a long period. And when his son David was killed in a car accident in 1970, that was the end of music for Moles. He saw David's death as a clarion call to get closer to God. Accordingly, there were no more living room concerts or even church playing. He abandoned the guitar and went into a deep pit of depression, where he did not play nor show any interest in it. From 1970 to 1973, he evinced no interest whatsoever in the guitar or any other music. Mose would not resurface until 1973. The National Park Service, through its Festival of American Folklife, offered a chance for the Commonwealth to show the rest of the nation what unique and fascinating contributions the bluegrass offered to the nation and the world. And Kentucky folklorist Dr. Archie Green said, Fort Brightly, that Mose was the man that had to be on any program that pretended to represent Kentucky music. It took a lot of persuasion and a new suit forced upon him by his wife, but Mose relented and went and was overjoyed to be with his protege and his old friend, Merle Travis. The Smithsonian Institution's Folklife Festival in 1973 changed Mose. At first reluctant to even attend, he came back home with a profound notion that music and religion can be practiced at the same time without mutual contradiction. He could be in the world, but not of the world. Mose would enjoy music then for the rest of his life, appearing again in 1976 for the American Bicentennial Celebration in Washington, and even touring Japan for 3 weeks with Merle Travis. He said, you can't get much farther from Muhlenberg County than Japan. At the end of his life, Mose had what he really desired, his God, his soul, his family, his Kentucky home, and a multitude, or a gum of friends, as he liked to say. Mose's influence is widespread. Just as Chet Atkinson, I'd probably be looking at the rear end of a mule if it weren't for Merle Travis. Merle noted Riley that if it hadn't been for Mose Rager, he'd be picking up aluminum cans, or he would have spent a lifetime in those old mines. Other musicians who cite Mose as a direct or indirect influence are Doc Watson, Eddie Pennington, Earl Hooker, Steve Warner, Scotty Moore, Marcel Dotti, Tommy Emmanuel, Tom Gresh, Benny Grove, Albert Lee, Jerry Reed, Carl Perkins, Clarence White, George Harrison, and Ben Holland. That's quite a list. Someone has written a poem about Mose, and it's called The Magic of Mose. Was in Muhlenberg County the legend began of an honest, hardworking, and God-fearing man who wanted no more if he wished on a star than to dig for black coal and play his guitar. His guitar that he played in his own different way, a style called thumb picking that lives on today. How the man loved his music and he taught others how is a legend of the miner with a thumb picking style. 'Twas something about him that set him apart, a kind of magic that captured your heart, a wisdom and laughter in the things that he could say, and a shyness that showed when you asked him to play. He'd reach for his guitar, and he'd say with a grin, I ain't played this old box since good Lord knows when. When he found his thumb pick, then time would be froze. The room would be filled with the magic of Mose. Humble Mose never understood this magic or any kind of popularity, noting, everybody in thumb picking play better than me. I don't see how my name got out of the county. Mose Rager was a good, decent man who lived by the biblical edict. If a man say, I love God and hateth his brother, he's a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. He once disbanded a small group that he had formed with some African-American friends, for he refused to be a part of any discrimination toward them. If they were not welcome, he was not welcome either. Mose saw talent and character, not color or class. Mose would die at the age of 75 in 1986. Kennedy Jones Sr. gave Mose start, and Mose in turn tutored Merle Travis, who in turn passed this unique style onto the world, where Travis has come to be the most copied guitar picker in history. In the early 1990s, a grant application prepared by the city of Drakesboro was sent to the Kentucky Bicentennial Commission seeking funding for a monument and a fountain to honor Mose, Kennedy Jones, Merle Travis, and Ike Everly. The funding was received, and the park, which is located off of Highway 176, features a monument for Mose with the following inscription. A unique personality and legendary country music thumb picker who is known as Kentucky's Shy Guitar Master. He was a country music pioneer and a legendary musician in his own right, who enjoyed every day just being himself. Merle Travis once said of Mose, "We are all imitators of the greatest." And so when you hear the thumb picking style, you are hearing Mose and that Muhlenberg sound. It was Mose's use of the thumb to run the bass lines and muting, using both a fretting hand and a picking hand, choking, that set Mose and the style apart. Think of the birth of the style as a tree with four lateral branches: Mose Rager, Kennedy Jones, Arnold Schultz, and Merle Travis. Then think of this tree rooted in and fed by historic, physiographic, cultural, and socioeconomic factors, such as the fusion of coal mining, which created musical motifs for camaraderie, and love of community and family, warm interpersonal race relations that heard music and did not see color, the excitement and the new styles that river life brought to the region, the depression and the raw innate talent of its practitioners. This is that Muhlenberg sound, this country ragtime style created from this mind, music, race subculture that has influenced and benefited not just Western Kentucky, but the nation and the world. Since our guitar player is here, not here tonight, I want to play you. There's very little film of Mose that I could find, but I want to show you a little piece of that. And before I do, as I said, I do not understand the thumb picking and all that's going on. And so when I was, Dr. Jackson and I would go back about talking about it, what to put in the chapters, I wanted to put this in because I thought it sort of explained thumb picking. But as you all can see, after I read this, he said, no. So this technical explanation for thumb picking, I'll read just a bit of it and then we'll let Mose play for it. A pulsating, alternating bass line played with a thumb pick, which emphasizes a strong, metronomic 1-3 rhythm. The thumb accents the first and the third beats of a 4/4 time measure. Yes. Next explanation. A steady but lighter afterbeat played also with a thumb that accents the second and fourth beats, resulting in a bright, bouncy, dance-like rhythm. Rather than simply striking a single note, however, the thumb brushes a 4 or 5 string chord that provides a harmonic foundation for the song. These chords are invariably complex and sophisticated and rarely played in the first position, but run rather high up on the neck. Now you all get that, I'm sure. And then one of the last ones, a soft, playful, syncopated melody line that darts in and out of where it should be, played with a fleshy part, sometimes the fingernail, sometimes the thumb, sometimes the index finger. So as you can see, Dr. Jackson thought that's a little too much because it really doesn't explain anything. You have to see it in action. And someone at the last presentation asked me about that he heard a story about Kennedy Jones and the star of the Muhlenberg style, and that he had a blister on his finger, and that, you know, he had won some thumb picks. And so after the conversation, we all decided that the Muhlenberg sound is all the result of a blister on his thumb. Well, let me see if I can. Lee, you might get that started. I think this is about over here. Yeah.
Fine day, the sky turned dark at night. When the sky turned dark at night. Will it rain 5 days when the sky turned dark at night? Trouble taking place in the lowlands at night. Well, it thundered and lightning and the wind begins. You all wanna get you a bad cold. Well, it thundered and lightning and the wind begins to blow. Well, there's thousands of people ain't got no place to go. I can't move no more, I'm trapped in. Oh, I can't move no more. Well, my house fell down and I can't live there.
What's that called?
Backwater
Blues. Oh, that's nice. Really nice.
You do like it.
I love it.
Don't you do that?
No, I don't.
We wouldn't get you at all. That's wonderful. It really is.
Well, thank you.
I remember back years ago, driving through Drakesboro, and you always had a guitar. You and Dad wouldn't know what I'm saying. You just grabbed a guitar and sort of pass it back and forth.
Yeah.
Before you
thank
began.
You.
Yeah.
You taught you to play guitar.
Well, my sisters, I had about 3 or 4 sisters to play. Apparently, I bet you they all played that. And so, when they get the guitar, I wouldn't let them have no peace. I'd cry, Mama, maybe give me the guitar. They had to keep me quiet, you know. So when I got the old guitar, you know, and I'd thump around like this, you know, there's a little door step back. Two little cats. I ain't hold nothing back from the tell
all. Oh,
that's good. Boy, I do it all day long. That's what's the whole thing I do. And finally, I got to make a tribute to my mom and dad for the mother that she bought. And she, when I gave to her.
They consider thumbing a guitar and come for writing right here. I guess that Merle was the one that popularized that. He was a good writer, Merle Travis was a very fine writer, 16 tons, Darkest Dungeon.
Was that guitar style a particular thing in the mining areas?
Now, Merle came around, I guess, to learn from Mose Reger, my father. Merle gives Dad a lot of credit for helping teach him, actually, a few chords here and there and whatever.
I'd be happy to answer any questions. I had a colleague last week. I told her, I made it clear, I have the musical ability of a gnat. Do not ask me, you know, about the guitar and all that. What did she do? She asked me a question. So you all can ask me about Mose and his granddaughter's here. You all can ask her. Maybe something that I might not know. But I thank you all, and as I said, it's been a wonderful journey learning about that area. Someone asked me about writing, you know, why bother with local history or somebody not so well known? Because when I mentioned Mose Reger, you know, people will say, no, I don't really know him. But then I'll say Merle Travis or Chet Atkins, and then they'll get that lineage. And then, of course, and you all saw all of all of the, or the names that I mentioned, and there's some photographs there at the end of the people who've been influenced by him. And so that, to me, you know, how many more books can there be about the Civil War or the founding of the country or some other topic? You know, these local stories, if they're not captured, they'll be lost forever. And they're really what's important. Everybody's life is worthy of a book, I think, worthy of a story. So, but
I had a question. You commented in the book that he didn't have a favorite guitar. He didn't, you know, a lot of guitarists keep the guitar for a lifetime, but he didn't, did he?
As far as I understood, he never, hardly ever even had one.
Yeah.
And you know, in the beginning of the book, I talk about that he said they got together, an older man that knew them, and he needed some money, and so Mose and his friends got together, and the man said, "I'll sell it to you for $3. And he said, Mose got together $2.93 and some washers, and the guy sold it to them for that. So that was his first so-called real guitar, but it never seemed that he had a favorite, or, you know, sometimes he didn't even have one. He was always borrowing to have one. But they do have, I believe, one of Mose's guitars in the Country Music Hall of Fame, and then I think there's even one of the...
Travis.
That's right.
That was my daddy's uncle.
Oh, okay. Wow, wonderful.
It's a long one. Yeah, that's probably this high.
And you wonder if he...
And so, tell me the relation again. So
he was my daddy's uncle.
Oh, okay.
Who was your dad?
Ray Nicer.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Uh-oh, family reunion.
Yeah. So that was Queen Ray, or, you know.
Queen, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Aunt Bonnie, Aunt Gossie, and Aunt Queen. Those were the three aunts, you know, that I remember.
We went there many Sunday afternoons after church, and Mom sometimes would go, but us two girls would go. My two sisters. Then Grandma Rager would be there, you know. That's his mother. And he'd say, "Do y'all want to do anything special?" And they'd say, "Oh, it doesn't really matter, just play something." And she said, "Now, Mom's, I want you to play Home Sweet Home." He's still got mother. So he got up the piano. Oh, and he's so familiar. Of course, Daddy looked awful lot like him anyway. And he'd play some old boogie-woogie thing. I mean, it wasn't anything like Home Sweet Home. He'd play some of those. And she said, "Now, Ma," he said, "now, how do y'all like Home Sweet Home?" He said, "No, that's not it." His mother would just say, "Oh, Lord, I can't believe you told them that." He said, "They know I'm just kidding."
Somebody asked me last week, you know, what was his favorite kind of music. They assumed country music, and that was not true. He did not like country music. He loved the blues.
Loved the blues.
And you always tell that bluesy sound there. So he loved the blues.
I put that in, you know, like a lot of religious songs.
Yeah,
too.
And you know, that was part of the problem. But he loved the standards of the day. But he was not. He didn't like country music.
And hated bluegrass.
Really?
He did not like bluegrass music at all. He listened to it. But he honestly did not like bluegrass.
A little too twangy.
Yeah, a little too twangy.
We got to see just a glance of the famous Everly Brothers,
yes.
Who I remember growing up in Canada. Let's stick to them and play them again. Yeah. What was the connection with Everly?
Yeah. I was their father.
From the same town?
Yes.
Clinton and Drakesboro were like, 5 miles apart.
Yes.
And they would all meet down and play music, and there was always Ike Everly and Granddad like playing, and then when they grew up and moved off, they would come visit. You know.
And this film footage is a part of a larger BBC documentary about the Everly Brothers. And I hope we get a copy. It's very hard to find, but I was pleased to find that little clip there.
Why don't you advertise them and tell them about the Bell Travis Center where Moses moves the uniform and guitar and things in there.
Yeah.
But they have that thumping every September.
It is called the Merle Travis Music Center.
Music Center. Yes, it is in Powderly.
Powderly.
Across
from
the Convention Inn. And they have it every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the last of September.
Okay.
What uniform do they have down there?
What?
They have one of my granddaddy's uniforms?
Yeah.
What?
You don't know
I remember when the Smithsonian thing come up.
Yeah, I remember.
My grandmother went and bought him the most gaudy Western shirts that she could find. And I know one was black and it had roses all over it and all the pearl beads. And she walked in there and he looked at that and he said, "Laverna, I am not putting that on." And that's why he wound up with a checkered jacket suit, because he was not going to wear that outfit. All they had wore was that.
I bet. That seemed to be... She wanted
the glitz and glamour, yes. But this jacket here, that's what he wore. You know, that was him. This other stuff wasn't.
What was the connection with Chad?
I'll let Gary talk about it a little bit. Gary, Chad Atkins and Merle Travis?
Well, Chad always maintained he heard Merle Travis on a certain radio program that Merle was doing at the time. I forget where he was at. Chad Atkins listened to Merle Travis play the guitar and was so intrigued with him that he took up the guitar. And of course, we know, you know, what Merle Travis, Chad Atkins, probably the most popular guitarist of all time. So, you know, the connection is, had Merle Travis not become popular, you know, by listening to Mose Rager, then Chad would not have become popular by listening to Merle. And of course, after, you know, Chet become famous and Merle, of course, being a celebrity, and they would talk about, you know, the origin of this, you know, Merle brought Chet, you know, to Muhlenberg County to meet Mose, and they become good friends. And so, you know, it all became a collage of this Thumb Picking style that they all love. So that was the connection.
See, it's got
that was the intro.
Yeah. See, he's got the tongue. Get the tone from people come from the one guy that was there was kind of, it's from Australia.
Oh yes, Tommy Emmanuel.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I mean. They just come from everywhere. It's really an event, a good event.
So we were at the Thumb Picking Hall of Fame a few weeks ago and got to hear Tommy Emmanuel from Australia. I mean, it just showed you how widespread that this has gone. If you ever get a chance to go down there, it's really
worth your while.
It really is.
This picture right here, I took that. Granddaddy had just come out of the hospital at Madisonville where he had his kidney removed. And Merle and Chet were sitting on the porch waiting for us to get there. So we took all these pictures and everything. The next month, I think, is when Merle had his heart attack and passed away. It was about a month after that.
There's a letter, of course, that Merle was quite an accomplished. He was not only a wonderful guitarist, but he was a wonderful writer, a wonderful cartoonist. And so this is just a sample of a letter that he would write to Merle.
He was an excellent cartoonist.
He was.
He was cartoonist.
Oh, yeah. He said he was the most important person out there. He operated the buttons on the elevator.
And I got drawn into this. I have this one thing I remember that I think it's 1974. Chet Atkins and Merle Travis did an album together for RCA called the Atkins Travis Travel Show.
Yeah.
And on that particular album, Merle is reflecting back to his learning the thumb picking style, and he mentions Mose Rager and learning from him. And I can't really, I think, also mention on that album. I think because of that album, especially, that more people got educated into the thumb picking history and style. And every guitar picker around anywhere that was near Muhlenberg County, they made their way to Muhlenberg County to meet Mose Rager. I worked with a man the other day. We were talking about this book. He said, "Oh, I met him one time. I went." He said, "Well, come in." And I said, he talked to me and played for me. So I think about every guitar player people who fancy themselves as a guitar player traveled there and met Mose.
Oh, he didn't know a stranger. I mean, you come to the house, you was going to come in and you was going to leave before you left.
You never knew.
Of course, I'm a teenager running around, you know, and they're like gathered out in the front yard, just droves of people. You can't walk through the house. And like Grandpa Jones, Chet Atkins, Merle Travis, Ike Early, well, did I care? No, I'm over here playing with these kids next door, you know. And came out, I'm like, God, you should have paid more.
I really had loved to be here, but I don't see this.
Well, it's funny.
He was his great example, really.
He said that I had 3 or 4 sisters, and I thought, now I thought you should know how many he had. But in the back of the book, I tried to get them. He had more than, you know.
There was 13 that we had.
Yeah, 13. Well, he was a little off.
You ever met a stranger?
I remember him saying, one time we were talking, somebody had come to the house and ate. And of course, my grandmother, she didn't know how to cook for a little. She cooked for an army. He said, I had rather have somebody come to the house and tell me they're not hungry and sit down and eat as somebody that comes in here and says they're not hungry. No, I got that wrong. Tell me they're hungry and sit down and eat as to tell me they're not hungry and sit down because they're going to eat you out of the house. And I thought, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
That's really good.
At the end, there may be a little bit of a question
Eddie Gillings in there.
Yes.
Thank you.